There's been a big movement to teach financial literacy in recent years, from politicians, schools, and the business world. But our next guest says financial literacy education doesn't always pay off.
Helene Olin joins us now. She's a journalist and the author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Her recent piece, titled The Quest to Improve America's Financial Literacy is Both a Failure and a Sham, it appears on the Pacific Standard website. Helene, welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Thanks for joining us. Well, how widespread is the notion that we need more financial literacy education for kids and grown-ups?
It is incredibly widespread. If you would stop and ask almost anyone what they think we need to teach in the schools, what we need more of, they would tell you financial literacy. Everyone seems to believe that there's some essential secret we are not teaching children and adults now, and that if they could simply master it, all of our financial woes would go away. As I discovered when I wrote Pound Foolish, that's just not true. And before you ask me anything else, I want to say that discovery just about broke my heart. I had begun to look at financial literacy as a potential solve for a number of our woes.
And you say that even the Great Recession was blamed, at least by some people, on a lack of financial literacy.
That's right. One of the things you've began to find over and over again is a kind of false equivalence, where you would see people say, and it would be everyone from, you know, people who had bought homes to all the way up at the high banks and government, that yes, these banks sold people this bill of goods when they got them to sign mortgages, but people really should have known better than to sign these papers that they didn't understand, without any understanding of the fact that we all have these. If you've ever seen a mortgage documentation, it's 100 pages, single, small-spaced, small print papers, and people are not reading it. And, of course, they're not reading it. Are you reading it? And you began to see this said over and over again, including by people at the Federal Reserve, the Obama administration, and my favorite was Bank of America, which got itself all sorts of trouble by buying Countrywide home finance, which was at the epicenter of the mortgage problems for the country.
Well, we said the headline of your piece up front there, saying that financial literacy education is a failure and a sham. Let's start with the failure part. What evidence is there that financial literacy programs don't help people deal with money?
Well, I'll go back to the beginning here for a moment. Financial literacy really began to pick up in the mid-1990s, and it began to be studied at the same time. So it takes several years for all of this stuff to come around. But what eventually started to come out over and over again was that people who had taken these classes at schools were no better informed about financial topics than anybody else. And before anyone thinks that that was found by someone who had an axe to grind, that was actually the finding of Lou Mandel, who was one of the founders of the modern financial literacy movement. Subsequently, you began to see other studies come along. There was a recent one out of the University of Colorado within the past year that found what they called a negligible impact on financial behavior, and that within 20 months, pretty much everyone had forgotten anything they'd learned. And there was also a study out of Harvard last year that also found that these classes had zero impact on anybody's behavior at all. What they actually found had some impact on financial smarts was increasing math classes in that case.
Well, could it be a case that we're just doing it wrong? We don't have the right kind of financial literacy, or, you know, we're trying to teach, something about mortgages to people in ninth grade and they're not ready to learn that yet?
Well, that's what the people pushing the concept like to say. And I should preface that by saying the people pushing the concept at this point are often the banks and the financial services sector, which has the most to be gained from this. Because essentially what is going on is they're saying, we don't need regulation to help people so that we could get mortgages they understand, and we can make retirement accounts simple so that people can actually use them. Instead, if we could just teach people to avoid the gotcha terms that we ourselves have created, all will be well. And that's just ridiculous.
And is that part of your concept that financial literacy isn't just a failure but a sham?
Yes, that is the sham of financial literacy.
But is there a right way to do it? Is there a, I mean, we'll get into the individual versus social side of the problem in a little bit, but is there a good kind of financial literacy education? Isn't there some way to help people navigate a complicated financial landscape?
Well, what you're seeing, where the small portion of it is coming in, is there's people now saying, well, we need to do this thing called just-in-time financial education. So the idea is that when you go to make a purchase of a home, they'll give you a talk on what mortgages are. Or if you go to buy a car, they'll talk to you about car loans. The evidence for this is somewhat mixed. In some senses, it does seem to help. But in other senses, you're beginning to deal with the fact that there's no standard regulation. So you see sites like my favorite being Ally Financial, which does car loans, which has an entire site devoted to educating their consumers that does not tell you what a subprime loan is, how to know you're being offered one, and what it would look like if you did get one, and why it is such an awful thing to have. So you have a basic conflict of interest problem. The second issue is that just-in-time is unfortunately something of a nebulous concept. What exactly is just-in-time for a college loan, for instance? Is it when you're signing up for the student loan? Or is it 10 years earlier when your parents are saving for college? What would be better? So you get into that part of the problem, too. Unfortunately, our financial problems are just greater than that.
We're talking about financial literacy education with Helene Olin. She says despite lots of calls for more of that kind of education, it doesn't, according to some research, seem to work.
And you can join the conversation. Do you want to make the case for teaching financial literacy? Is there a lesson that's helped you deal with money? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. We continue our conversation about financial literacy education with Helene Olin. She says there are a lot of people calling for more education on personal finance, but most of it doesn't really help us deal with our money.
You can join the conversation with your thoughts and your questions on financial literacy and how individuals cannot navigate a complex financial world. Call in at 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We'll get your calls in just a minute. But Helene, first, I think a core point in your book and in the piece that we're talking about today is the contrast between these two thoughts. Financial problems are largely an individual issue. Financial problems are largely a bigger social societal issue. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. Well, there's always a push-pull. Everybody makes mistakes. But ultimately, where I came out on this was that when I looked at the data, our nation had a 10% savings rate in 1980. Today, we're somewhere between 3 and 4%. At one point during the last decade, we were actually at 0%. And the fashionable interpretation of that is we became a nation of wastrels and spendthrifts, and we didn't pay any attention to anything, and we suddenly lived for the day. And, by the way, we became collectively more ignorant to boot. That is actually completely untrue. What essentially happened was, is our financial world got a heck of a lot more complicated in terms of what products were being offered to us, at the same time as our salaries were stagnating and falling. And as a result, we began to stop saving money and turn to other ways to get by. And this, I should say, was completely pitched at Americans. People were told, invest in housing. You can get your way around income inequality this way. That was in Money Magazine in 2005. People were constantly told, you know, buy this stock, buy that stock. We have an entire network on television devoted to that to this day. So it becomes a sort of complex interplay. Do people make mistakes? Yes, we all make mistakes. None of us are perfect. But to assume that our financial woes are simply the result of ignorance is unfortunately not true. I wish it were.
We'll get to our callers now. We've got Nicholas to start us off in New Berlin. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I recently had the chance to sit down with my older brother while he was making a purchase of a car at a used car dealership. And, I mean, we sat there for 3 hours and hashed it out. And I think it was a really great learning experience because I'd never really known kind of what, I don't know, all these financing, all these percentages, what it all added up to. And same goes with my parents. When I was 16 years old, my dad sat me down and had me do my taxes with him rather than just doing them for me. And I think that was a really good learning experience and helped me break my way into my own finances as I'm a starting college student.
I think that's terrific. And I am, by the way, all for that. And I think that is exactly how people learn. I don't think you learn it in a class. I think you learn it with your family by example and so on.
But a point you made earlier, even if we learn these things, sometimes we've got that 100-page disclosure document on the mortgage staring us in the face.
That's right. And that's the other part of this, though, is your family can set a really good example, but at the same time, it's not impossible to be fooled or switched and, you know, bait and switched. Call me in a couple of years when you buy a car and tell me how much you remember of going with your brother to this. And then we should actually talk to the researchers at the University of Colorado and see what they say.
But if we learn, maybe not the specific ins and outs, but I guess how about a skeptical attitude toward what is put in front of us by various financial institutions, that might be a lesson worth learning?
That's a lesson worth learning, but that's not what's being taught right now. What's being taught right now are basically, this is what compound interest is, this is what a mortgage is, this is what a mutual fund is. And as I said again, it's all self-interested. A lot of it is, we didn't actually mention this on the radio, but I do mention it in the article, a lot of this is actually provided by the banks and financial services themselves. So a lot of the information out there is simply not always accurate or not skewed in your best interest. We've found lessons on financial planning for school children that don't mention, for example, to look at the cost of investments, which is pretty basic stuff. Not, mind you, that anybody's going to remember it, but if you're teaching it, it should be there.
Thanks for the call, Nicholas. We'll go now to Mike in Green Lakes. Mike, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Just a great topic, financial literacy. I was a banker for a number of years, and then I was a mortgage broker for years, and I've been at 25 years in the financial planning industry now. And both my experience in banking and mortgage lending led me to become a financial planner because people are woefully unprepared for the products that are out there. But even more than that basic education, I would like to see us get to a point where we eliminate some of these very dangerous products, the liar's loan, and the subprime mortgage market. The idea that everybody has to own a house was so dangerous. Everybody needs some place to stay, yeah, but they don't need to have this huge mortgage and own a house.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree, and that's essentially my point, is I think a lot of this talk of financial literacy, especially by the financial establishment, is a way of preventing that sort of regulation and legislation from getting through, unfortunately. When you think about it, what's more effective, banning liar's loans or trying to teach more than 300 million Americans what they are and how to avoid them?
Thanks for the call. We'll go now to Jeff with us in Rhinelander. Hi there, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What do you think?
I am a CPA, and I've actually spent some time auditing financial aid at higher education institutions. So I've seen the crippling effects that poor education can have when you don't know what you're getting yourself into in loans, particularly when 18-year-olds are taking out giant loans for education. I agree with you that maybe a course in and of itself in financial literacy may be well over the heads of children, but are there ways to incorporate financial literacy education into curriculums such as math, where you're giving real-world examples in textbooks about the dangers of credit cards with high APR and carrying balances, taking out student loans you'll never be able to afford, things of the such?
Well, I want to go back to one other thing to talk about the student loans for a minute. There is actually on record a number of the universities claiming that the main problem facing students right now is not the cost of higher education, but that they're simply ignorant about the student loans and what their impact is on them. That is just absolutely wrong. There is simply no way anybody could have planned for the cost of higher education right now. Higher education has been going up for the most part, at double the rate of inflation now for 30 years. To have expected anybody to have planned and anticipated that is a bit of a bogus assumption. So that's the first part of this. The second part is it actually used to be, prior to World War II, that that what we call financial literacy was indeed ingrained into the curriculum. Did it work? We really don't have the answer to that question. People were more financially responsible, but people were more financially responsible because, in part, the instruments that could get them into so much trouble simply didn't exist. So you couldn't get into credit card debt, my grandmother, for instance, because credit cards didn't exist. And when they did first exist, she wasn't able to have one until 1973. That was when married women got the right to have one. So there's a lot of complexities in this argument that sort of belie the simple solution we all think it is.
Helene, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was Helene Olin. She's a journalist. She's the author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Her recent piece titled The Quest to Improve America's Financial Literacy is Both a Failure and a Sham appears on the Pacific Standard website.